It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
Okay, it's 9:25 on the Wednesday, 20th of November, Wine Country Live morning show. And as mentioned, Larry Kamer is here. We have issues with Larry Kamer. Good morning.
Hey, Barry.
It's my favorite title of all of our features, Carly.
Well, and you came up with it, too, so even better.
I'm good at titling things. It's one of my skills. This is our first chance to talk post-election. It's been 2 weeks ago yesterday. Some folks went through several days of just immobilized shock, I think, at things not turning out the way they expected. Let's focus on the national for a second here before we filter down in any way. I guess the first question is that sense of shock that some people had was based on polls and the idea that we knew what the outcome was going to be. It sure looks like this. Sure looks like Trump doesn't even care anymore. He's, giving oral sex to a microphone. Well, he must have checked out, right? But instead, that wasn't at all what was happening. So the question is, why do we always fall into the same trap of looking at polls before elections? They seem to mean nothing anymore.
Well, and this is something you and I have talked about, that you have to be a smart consumer when you're looking at polls, and you have to understand what a poll tells you. A poll tells you where the sentiment of the voters is at that snapshot in time. Every one of the polls, the reputable polls, showed this thing to be a toss-up, neck and neck, which means that each candidate had an equal chance of winning. And I think if you looked at closer to the election where they started doing the analyses about who has a better chance of winning, leaving aside the kind of the popular measurement. And if you looked at the betting markets, which you and I have talked about, they pointed to Trump. There was really not much question. So the phenomenon that you're describing, I think, affects a lot of people who are shocked and maybe in a little bit of denial. And look, the thing that we need to do now is not rush to, quick solutions and finger pointing. I think we got to take some time to really understand the what happened, not what are we going to do next time, not who didn't do their job. Too easy to, I think, to blame Joe Biden. Blame doesn't solve anything, quite frankly. So you got to look at the numbers and start from there.
And yet getting to the what, somebody's got to get blamed somewhere. There's something that made what Donald Trump was offering more attractive to more people.
Yeah, but I'm saying blame is a natural impulse. It's a human impulse, but it's not going to solve the problem. It's not going to make the Democrats a majority party, mm-hmm. which they are not right now. It's not going to return the Democrats to being the party of the working class, which they're not anymore. It's not going to get Democrats connected to people in the suburbs and exurbs. It's just not. So take a look at, as you and I were talking about off the air, this is like, okay, you wake up one day and you really don't like the way you look and feel. Time to go to the doctor. Get on that scale, get your numbers reported, listen to what he or she is saying, and do something about it. And if you don't, that's fine. You be you. But if you want to change, you got to start by looking at the numbers.
So let me bounce a few things off of you. People trying to explain what happened from the first day of reaction after the election. For some people, it was straight up, America is a racist and misogynist country. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
I thought, come on, that's too simplistic. There's more to it than that, regardless of what level of truth is represented by that statement. But then just the other day, I saw that the vote total for Hillary Clinton and the vote total for Kamala Harris are almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
So is there some real basis there of saying that America is not ready for a female president?
Maybe. I mean, I think that's real. You introduced two ideas here. There's the whole discussion of race and the debate about whether it's a question of race shaping our history significantly as a country and racism being a terrible thing, hurting a lot of people, versus racism explaining everything. I think if you polled most of the voters, on election day, they would say it's probably more the former than the latter, right? Does that make them racists? Does it make it right to call them racists? Not if you want to start pulling them back into your winning electoral coalition.
You said, I think, in the first cut, it's not all about blaming Joe. It can't be all about blaming Joe Biden. And I think if you when historians write the book, when the story is told of the Biden administration, there will be a lot of extremely positive things that will go into the record, that this achievement, that achievement, you know, one simple thing, the infrastructure.
Voters liked him a lot more than they liked Kamala Harris. Start with that.
Yeah, CHIPS and Science Act.
Right.
Inflation Reduction Act, which had a lot of other stuff in it.
Right.
These are things people have been trying to get done and asking for a long time. They got done.
Right.
Recovery from the pandemic, you know, handling the economy the best you possibly can when you have all these uncontrollable forces.
That's right.
Right? So that'll be the story of the Biden administration in terms of policy.
In time. Yeah.
In terms of policy and achievement. At the same time, though, the perception, and this is so over-repeated, I hesitate to even say it, but it doesn't matter what the stock market was doing. It doesn't matter that interest rates were getting under control. It doesn't matter that inflation was coming down.
Best economy in the world. Best performing economy in the world.
And yet millions of Americans feel like things are terrible for them financially.
Right.
Because their insurance went up, groceries
rent,
20%.
Mortgage, gas.
Right?
Right.
And that, you can't tell me this is a great economy. I have a 401k, but it's not important
to me.
Well,
you can't look
at
the voters and say, you're wrong. Yeah, right. You know, in my business, in the communication business, you know, fundamental rule is, you know, you can't fight feelings with facts. If people are feeling like their personal economic situation is terrible, don't point them to the stock market. Mm-hmm. You know, don't point them to historical trends. Listen to what they're telling you. And if eggs are $8 a dozen, or if, you know, you're having a really hard time finding not just a house, but an apartment because you can't afford the rent, they're telling you something. I mean, they're doing you a favor, in fact. They're telling you something.
Yeah. And at times, facts are almost counterproductive. For example, the whole egg price thing. It's like, did you not pay any attention to all the news about the avian flu? For 2 or 3 years, millions of chickens had to be destroyed. That was as much of a cause of the price of eggs problem as anything else. Maybe it was the cause. So, you got to have, you and I think, try to come at stuff from a logical perspective. Information, knowledge adds up to an answer.
Step back from getting all your news on social media. Step back from the hot takes from the pundits on, you know, Fox for some, MSNBC for others. And it's hard to do, but I mean, this is the time. You know, the Democrats, and I'm one of them, are about to be cast out into the wilderness for a while. You know, and the question is, what are we going to do? Are we going to wander for 40 years, or are we going to like figure out what went wrong and use the smarts and the money and the resources that we have? Democrats know how to win elections, but here, I think you got to start with the numbers, and then you got to start with the candidates, go to the candidates, and then you got to look at the message. Because I think the Republican appeal that the Democrats represent, the darkest impulses of America, kind of stuck. And so what are the Democrats going to do to get back to, you know, uniting a country, building a great nation, dealing with some of our social problems without going, you know, way overboard, you know, remembering that we have friends, you know, around the world, and we need to support those friends. These are things I think the voters are telling us they want to support. And they saw more of that with Trump than they did with Harris.
Yeah, I would not want to be in the profession of trying to figure out the next steps on the national level.
No. Yeah. No, I do think it's time to keep your ears open for the kind of green shoots of good ideas that serious people are willing to start talking about. So, for example, the day after the election, there was a post, I think it was on X, from Scott Wiener, the state senator from San Francisco, who, you know, is a very left by national standards, but pretty moderate by San Francisco standards. And he said, you know, we Democrats have made it really hard to build things, and we need to build things. People want an economy of abundance. People think America should be a place where we can continue to get bigger and better and more people can share in that. Why do we make it so hard for, you know, planning and zoning? Why do we empower NIMBYs as much as they're empowered to stop projects for just the most ridiculous reasons? And I thought that's an interesting, you know, him I'll listen to. That was my reaction. It's like, okay, he's right. He's being self-critical. I saw a post today from Senator Murphy, Chris Murphy from Connecticut, diagnosing, you know, all the reasons why he thinks the Democrats are on the wrong track and what we need to do to get back on the right track. So I would say, listen to those voices, not necessarily the loudest or the most convenient voices, because that's not going to help. That's not going to bring you in from the wilderness, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. The place we live in and the way people vote here, I'm going to talk about something that would be potentially offensive to some people, not representative. Maybe
you? Offensive? Come on.
Maybe not representative of what most of people think right now, right here. And I'm not saying this is what I think.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about a podcast I listened to from Sam Harris. You know,
oh, yeah.
Sam Harris.
Yeah. Great voice.
I think of him, first of all, as being a prominent atheist.
Yeah.
Right? That's where I first got to know
about
him. But he's involved in thinking and talking about a lot of stuff, right?
Yes.
And so his analysis post-election, he did a chunk of his segment on essentially wokeism.
Yes.
Okay? And he has a way of saying things very directly and very bluntly and not caring about the consequences of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's not inflammatory. He's not crazy, right? He's not calling for action about things, but he just makes points in a very direct way. And one of the points he made was that the idea of calling people pregnant persons.
People with uteruses.
People with uteruses, things like that. Is one of those fundamental problems.
I agree.
That he might have used the word pandering, that the Democratic Party and Democratic candidates felt compelled, I think, to do what some would call pandering to a certain very small minority viewpoint.
Who can do nothing to help you win elections.
Right. And I think it's true on both the extreme right and the extreme left. You can go all the way to them to get their support, and then they will turn on you in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because they're so outraged about everything, right?
I agree.
Do you agree with that?
I agree.
Republicans are dealing with that.
Well, look, you know, we're going to have a reckoning on this conversation of gender and transgender. And look, I'll go out on the same limb with you and, you know, we'll see it come crashing down. But, you know, should there not be a place that is the province of biological women, like sports and prisons? Should we also not allow people who want to live as a different gender than how they were presented to this world? Sure. I mean, we're a country that should support, you know, people making those kind of choices, having that kind of freedom. So why is it that every time somebody says, no, I think, you know, women's prison should be for women or women's sport should be for women, the most horrible attacks, you know, that person is anti-trans or anti-child or, you know, I mean, we got to step back from how does this help us win? This is the lens I look at everything through. How does this help us win elections? I was saying to you earlier, I think the Democrats' biggest problem was they just continued to use this election to tell people what a horrible guy Donald Trump is. I have friends who are Trump supporters. They're like, we know he's a jerk. We know he's an AH, right? We know how terrible he is, but she's a bridge too far.
Yeah.
I'll take him and I like some of the things he's saying and I'll deal with his personality traits. But you know what? You don't have to convince me that he's a bad guy. Yeah. I know he's a bad guy.
Right. And that's just become very clear over time that You get the reaction. Yeah, I know about that, but I'm concerned about tax policy.
Right.
Yeah, I know about that, but I'm concerned about, and the, you know, insert your topic.
Yeah. Right?
And so it's just an ability to discount. You know, maybe that's just our fundamental cynicism about politicians, right?
I think Trump made it a little too easy for the Democrats to get off track and focus on humiliating him more than winning the election, doing what you need to do to win the election. And it showed. I mean, he won all seven swing states. He won the popular vote, which would have been unheard of just months before the election. The Democrats managed to salvage a few Senate races in those swing states. But look at the numbers in the Senate and the fact that the Democrats lost the House. I mean, it's close, but mm-hmm. it's not one or two votes.
Yeah, and I think really when you come, you know, back away from it, it really has become, almost ironically, are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, that answer was profoundly no. They do not feel.
But Trump is a threat to democracy.
Don't care.
Right.
Price of eggs, Larry.
But the thing is,
right?
This is the other thing that I think when we look back on it, it's going to reveal itself a little bit more. But if you remember, Biden was campaigning on this Trump is a menace to democracy mm-hmm. theme. And he was persuaded to get off of that because it wasn't working. And then, you know, you can talk about how well he did Bidenomics and, you know, but he at least was trying to move to an economics message. Harris, to her credit, made a lot of her campaign about economics and opportunity, but closed on fascism, you know. And I just don't get why, if it didn't work for Biden, she thought it would work for her.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, you know how it is with internal polling and focus groups, and they're saying this message is going to resonate with the 35 to 39-year-old women with one child, right? Yeah. And that's where they come back to that. Okay, this talking point has to be in the speech because it pulls well. It worked with this demographic group. Yeah. And that's just to me, there's like, come back to common sense at a certain level and listen to all different kinds of people talk and don't discount what they're saying.
Exactly.
Like you said about Trump supporters, I feel like my personal view is not hidden at all about Donald Trump.
No.
And I often say I don't feel that way about Republicans or conservatives in general. It's a particular individual.
And here's the hard thing that you're going to have to come to grips with, I'm going to have to come to grips with, and a lot of people are going to have to come to grips with. And I feel almost silly saying it. He is going to be the next president of the United States. You know, the Democrats don't do the thing that the MAGA people do and dispute the vote and say it was stolen. No, he won. And so how do you reconcile the fact that he's there, you know, to the winner goes the spoils, but this is a time of real opportunity because without the pressure of running government, the Democrats, I think, can be a little more free and creative to try some new things and to throw the long ball, which I think they've gotten kind of timid about.
That's well put. And you know, there's the old thing, too, that's commonly said, be careful what you wish for. And for the GOP to have control this way, it leaves people expecting action.
Yeah, well, it's their government now.
Yeah, right.
I was talking to a friend of mine. I said, every single time Reagan did it, Trump did it, they overreach. They feel like, you know, yes, a big majority of the voters supported you, but it doesn't mean the fact that America is not still a centrist country. We gather around the middle. Some of us are a little left, some of us are a little right.
Agreed.
And so to run the place like the most extreme of either poll and think you're going to get away for it for a long time, the voters are going to speak up to that too. And that's why parties in power lose in midterm elections.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see if Trump can control himself or whether he can use this mandate that he has. And he does have a mandate.
I disagree with that.
Well, look at the numbers.
It's like the 16th ranked popular vote margin.
All right, I'll take mandate back. He won a decisive victory. There,
okay, fair enough. I'll go with that.
He won a decisive victory, sure. And you can't deny that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not a country that delivers mandates.
Not for a long time. Like Nixon in 72 was a mandate.
Yeah.
Right?
Tell me one since.
400 electoral votes. That's a mandate.
Tell me one since.
Exactly. Yeah, things have changed. Wow. Well, it's a good conversation. I enjoy this. We're taking a little extra time with Larry on this particular occasion. What about the local stuff? What about the state stuff? What are your quick takeaways on that?
You know, the voters, unpredictable, as always. I think, you know, Napa City got the tax that was so important to it. So that tells me, and, you know, and the road tax passed. So it tells me the voters were not being completely stingy and, you know, seeking retribution. And my friends of mine who do tax measures, who run tax campaigns, thought, you know, taxes did pretty well, which says that people in communities are looking at local issues locally and making decisions on, yeah, okay, well, maybe we need to do this. You tell me what the statewide elections meant. I mean, how does the state of California not pass a measure banning slave labor in prisons? I mean, I've heard a theory that, you know, maybe people thought that was a little soft on crime. That was kind of a soft on crime issue. Mm-hmm. But,
you know what? I think that one was connected to the other measure about cracking down on retail theft and all that.
Yeah.
Same mentality. Like, look, I don't want people who get in prison because they're bad to have an easy time of it.
I want to enslave them.
I can break rocks.
Like being in prison is, you go to San Quentin, tell me that's an easy time.
Right.
But whatever.
Yeah. And it's just a mentality of like, no, you shouldn't, you're driving like maniacs, putting on sideshows, stealing everything. Yeah, go to prison and work your butt off for a while.
This mentality is powerful. This explains, I think, in large part, why London Breed lost. Why Pamela Price lost, why George Gascon lost, is that there's no greater sin right now than to be seen as too woke on crime, to be actually fighting crime in cities like Oakland, LA, and San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We all have our tolerance level, you know that famous joke about what is a conservative? A conservative is a liberal who's been mugged
the night before,
right?
That's Frank Rizzo.
70s.
Frank Rizzo's great
in the 70s, maybe, or the 80s. That goes a long way.
That's what Frank Rizzo, the mayor of Philadelphia, when I was growing up in the 70s,
there
used to say.
Right, and that's true. That's always been true.
Yeah,
that when you feel like crime is impacting you, your attitude about policing, your attitude about punishment. Changes really
and don't
quick.
Tell me homicides in Oakland are at a year's low. That's great, but somebody took the catalytic converter from my car right in front of my house last night.
That's it. So yeah, equal and opposite reaction, as Newton taught us.
I think you can say the voters make no sense. You can say the voters are crazy. You can say the voters are this or that. I think the task right now is listen to what they told you 15 days ago.
Yeah. I agree.
And be prepared to, confront some hard truths.
And common sense. That's what people are crying out for. Like, on the face of this, it doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
This position, that position.
Right.
Let's get to where just like the groups of people, get 2/3 of people in a group to say, yes, that's common sense to me.
Yeah. I get why if you want to put she, her on your signature line, on your email, God bless. That's important to you. I love you. I respect you. Oh, it's company policy that I have to put it on mine. Well, I'm not quite there yet.
Two entirely different issues.
Yeah. Right?
And I just want to wrap up by saying that nothing that I've mentioned, the Sam Harris stuff, any of that, is my personal view about people who are trans, people who are gender fluid, non-binary, all of that. I believe we should all get to live our lives the way we choose.
Totally agree.
All right. That may not be, I don't know if that's the majority opinion, but that's what I personally believe. But the facts are the facts, and the way many people responded to the last few years of
I think you're going to get a lot further and appeal to a lot more people by trying to find that center than you are to wind yourself up into a pretzel like we do on gender, like we do on Gaza, like we do on, you know, on all these hot button issues. And I think you're right. I think there is a craving for people to say, there are some things that are right and wrong. There are some things that are actually black and white. And how do we adapt that to the real and dynamic world?
We have issues with Larry Kamer. We do this about once a month, and usually we don't chat quite this long. Thanks for indulging me.
Barry, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to The Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.